confident Camish doubles up at a damp Donington, whilst race two delivers a race for the ages. This is Donington Park with you.
Hello and welcome back to the British Touring Car Podcast. And we have got back from Donington in all safe, dried out now for what was a very, very good weekend of racing, wasn't it, Russ?
It was. It was very cold at times, very wet, very unpredictable. Tossed up a plethora of fantastic results. Lots of talking points. Touring Cars has been away for months and it came back in style at the weekend.
Yeah, plenty of talking points to go through. We're changing it up a little bit for this season. We're going to split the review podcast in half. So you'll get all the race happenings in this first one. And then there'll be another one coming out, which will sum up our grades for this weekend and also have a look at the predictions that we made in the pre-race or pre-weekend podcast. Anyway, we shall get straight into it and we'll first have a look at qualifying for this weekend.
Qualifying report.
So this weekend's qualifying format had a top 10 shootout. So we would have a 30-minute session to weed out those top 10 drivers who were quickest so far. Then they would go into a 10-minute shootout session. So the drivers that sort of stood out in the first half of that were, first of all, Pearson, who managed to qualify up in 11th. Butcher was sadly not quite inside the top 10 and finished 13th. And Collard, although getting into the top 10 shootout, was not able to compete in it due to a split fuel line at the end of Q1, something similar to what we saw happen with Camish last season. Into the top 10 shootout was a massive effort by debutant Andrew Watson.
Yes, very good.
And Sutton got in there with the fastest time. So yeah, into the top 10 shootout, and Sutton was looking like he was going to be right up there, along with teammate Rowbottom and Camish. The Fords were looking exceptionally quick so far this weekend, weren't they?
Very well, yes.
Yes. And it was Rowbottom who started to set the pace. Sutton did have a very quick lap to go top of the times, but that was then deleted for track limit infringements.
Classic, it's been a while, but as Sutton and track limits, namely a better combination.
Yeah, especially at Donington as well.
Yeah, well, he's a driver that certainly leaves it all on the track and pushes that car to the absolute limits week in, week out.
So much so, on his second lap, he had to hold back a little bit, which means that he missed out on pole position, with Rowbottom taking his third career pole and it being a Napa all front row. WSR BMW and Laser Tools BMW would line up on the second row with Hill and Turkington, followed by last year's champion Tom Ingram.
Yep, Josh Cook, Adam Morgan, Andrew Watson and Ricky Collard made up the top 10. Just quickly on the shootout.
Yeah,
I think we both agree it's a cool thing. We both,
yes,
like it.
Very much so.
I have got one question.
Yes.
Is it fair, given the fact that you've only got 10 minutes and the BMWs don't have to cross tyres? I'm thinking of Snetterton, where you're looking at a much longer lap time. And I believe there's a shootout at Snetterton.
Yeah,
as
we've
well.
Got five shootouts in total this season.
Again, it's great to be informed as we are. but you know, for someone like Snetterton, where you know it is... a longer lap, is it fair that the BMWs don't have to come in across tyres, or is that just how motorsport goes sometimes?
I think it's a case of that's how motorsport goes sometimes.
They're not doing it Snetterton anyway, so that's fine.
Perfect. Because I think if you also get a wet session, then that probably gives the advantage to the front-wheel drive cars. So it's a bit of peaks and troughs, give and take. And I think the BMWs will take it when they can take it, and do what they can where they can.
Just to sort of clarify, Donington, Brands, Indy, Alton Park, Knockhill and Silverstone are the tracks where they're doing this. Alton Park is an interesting one because that is a longer lap.
Yeah.
The other four are pretty quick circuits, so I guess it negates the BMWs not having to cross tyres. Alton Park is where it could be more pronounced, that advantage. But yeah, I like the idea. I think we've discussed in the past that shaking up qualifying is not a bad idea. I also quite like what Formula Ford are doing this year with their qualifying, which is that your fastest lap is the order for race three.
Yep.
Your second fastest is the order for race one.
Yeah.
Kind of like that.
A full grid reversement for race two as well.
Yeah.
An interesting one because you then get points on top of making up positions in the race.
Yeah. I won't go for a full reversal here.
No.
But I'm happy with that. I do think that the BMWs have an advantage, but they didn't get pole ultimately.
So. No, they didn't. And there was a decent gap as well. Hill was closest, about, what, a tenth or two off? But Rowbottom and Sutton were within half a tenth of each other.
If it gets to the point where they have a four, they then get the pole. I wonder if we'll see so that they have a reduced window. Maybe they only have 8 minutes or something to...
Possibly, but there'll be so many people jumping up and down if it's not fair for all.
Well, yeah, absolutely, yeah. But that's
motorsport, isn't it?
It is, so. And to be fair, the conditions on Saturday were fine. They were a little bit cold, but they weren't wet. So it wasn't peak performance BMW window. But obviously, Orton Park in June could potentially be.
Across the whole of the qualifying session, there were nearly 20 lap times deleted for track limits, and I think that is something that they're going to try and clamp down on again this season. It seems as if any part of your tyre runs over the white line, then you're going to have your lap time looked at and then deleted. And in racing terms, that will then come in with 5 second penalties and gradually build up.
It's the only fair way. At the end of the day, the white line is the racetrack. Anything over that isn't. Whilst I want to see cars pushing and trying to get that ultimate lap equally, you know, you can't say, well, it's only a little bit over, because you then run into all kinds of problems and inconsistencies. I mean,
we see it in F1 as well. Yeah. So it's the same across the board in motorsport. Every driver is looking to get that minute advantage that they can, and they will push it to the absolute limit.
Absolutely. Should we move on to race number one?
Yeah, let's get into it.
Race one.
Right, so race number one saw a wet road but with a drying line. So all the drivers came out on wet. So we did wonder if anybody would take the risk and start on slicks. Nobody did. I think it was ultimately the right decision not to start on slicks. Hill tried it to the grid.
I was going
to
say, interestingly, there were a couple of cars that tried out the slicks to the grid. They did have two almost reconnaissance laps as well.
Yes.
And Hill was saying, sort of like towards the end of that, it was starting to get a little bit back from the tyre. But overall, looking at what all the other cars were doing, I think it was the safer option to start on the wet.
So the thing is, if you're Hill and you're starting that high, you're going to inevitably drop back on the slicks. And would the wind at the start?
Oh, yeah.
And would the window come in with enough time left to charge through the field? Because I think it's a lot easier the other way around, i.e. you start on wets on a dry track and it gets wet, you'll get through a lot quicker.
Yeah.
Because if it gets wet quicker. Yes. Whereas, obviously, a new surface at Donington this weekend just gone as well. If you start on the wets and it dries, it's going to take a fair while to dry enough for slicks to really come into their own.
Yeah, it certainly is. And it was an interesting start as well. Rowbottom didn't get off to a great start, was slow off the line. Sutton made a good one, as we all expect. So did Hill and Turkington, being in those rear-wheel drive BMWs. But then came the first incident.
It did. They have missed something, I'm afraid. Jade Edwards was, well, peeled in to the pits at the end of the warm-up lap, or the green flag lap, with a power steering problem with the car. That, unfortunately, was the tone setter for the weekend. One to forget for Jade, as we'll get to as the race goes on.
Yep.
But you're right, yes. Starts was, well, Rowbottom made an appalling start, let's be honest. Really.
It was pretty bad.
Bogged it down. Hill ends up behind him, has to jink out to try and avoid a very slow moving car. As he does so, in my opinion, Sutton moves across, almost looking like they're going to try and squeeze. Hill reacts by moving across as well, which tags him into Rowbottom, and the result was sort of physics, how it works, or him hitting Rowbottom's car, he then comes
across. That's how science works.
It bounces off a Rowbottom into Sutton onto the grass, kicks up a load of grass in his radiator, rips the bottom off the car off, and that's pretty much game over for him. How did you see this? Anyone at fault?
Considering the time in the race, obviously being right at the start, you're going to have a lot of people jinking around, moving around for position, and you're going to get drivers that are trying to make the most of it, and you'll get drivers that are a little more cautious as well. We know Jake Hill's not a cautious driver. He's going to go for the gap if you can see it there. And the same with Sutton. And Sutton's moved over to try and cut him off nice and early to try and hold that position. And honestly, I think he's just misjudged it a little bit.
Yeah, me too. I think from Hill's point of view, where can he go?
Exactly. He's got Rowbottom on his right-hand side.
Yeah.
And if he sort of like anchors up, he's got a load of drivers piling down behind him.
Well, there's no space for him to go to the grass because Road Bottom's kept fairly tight to the grass. So Hill can't go around the outside. If he stays behind, he's going to go into the back of Road Bottom with an entire pack behind him. We're going to see a sort of incident we had with Oliphant and Hamilton at Knockhill a couple of years ago, where you get a horrible start line smash. So he goes to try and go to the middle of the track. For me, Sutton doesn't need to move across. Doesn't need to. Not that stage.
He's just trying to defend it straight away. We saw Sutton got a great start, and he's just trying to defend it.
In my opinion, it's a coming together.
He certainly wasn't happy in the garage midway through the race.
You're not going to be happy. You're on the front row of the grid, and you're out of the running so early on. You're going to know that every point is crucial. I know it's a very Will Buxton thing to say, but particularly in this championship, it's, you know, we've seen championships here won by a single point. It is a really tight championship. And you're now going to be counting, if you're certain, you're going to have to go, well, Camish, Hill, Turks and Ingram all going to have a bad weekend to make up for this, just for me to make up the ground I've lost here. So I get why he's cross. But for me, be a bit more careful. It's the opening lap of the first race of the touring car season. No prizes are given out today, apart from, obviously,
the trophies at the end of the race.
But no overall championships to get one today, but you can certainly lose them.
Yeah, certainly so. And it wasn't the only incident on the first lap. Turkington got a little nudged out wide down at the old hairpin, where, again, all drivers came together on the same piece of tarmac, not knowing what the grip's going to be down there going into the first court or down to the old hairpin at racing speed. And someone got nudged wide. It just happened to be Turkington.
Yeah, I mean, it's four abreast. It's a wet opening lap to touring car season. I have no sympathy particularly for Turkington. I'm sure it'll come as a surprise for everyone, but it's, you know, you've got a choice. You either duck out early, which I don't necessarily blame him for not doing, but equally you run the risk. You're going four wide on a wet track.
He's on the outside opening as lap. Well.
It is what it is. Yeah. No penalties were handed out for that. I think rightly so. That's what makes touring cars great. That people can go four abreast. That's ultimately somebody's got to lose out.
Yeah, that put him down to 14th in the mid pack, and he was going to have to try and fight his way back through.
Which he couldn't.
No, he really struggled to. Again, he was magnetised to jelly again in that first race.
The problem with Turkington is, I think we've seen this a couple of times last season as well, is that he's not great at recovering.
No, he doesn't fight back through the field, especially in conditions like that.
And he used to be able to do so. We've seen him do it in the past, but whether it's just the car, obviously the conditions don't suit the car, we know that. And yeah,
as Hill might have something to say about that.
But... No, but Camish said the same in the interview afterwards, that Hill had no right to be at the front in a rear-wheel drive car on the wrong tyre on a giant track. And you saw from where the other rear-wheel drive cars finished, that they were nowhere.
Yeah.
You know, not on the pace at all. Hill is just an exceptional driver. And we see that in the historics he races as well. Mm. He's a very, very good driver.
He likes a loose car, which I think helps in these conditions.
Absolutely. But we've seen a couple of times where Turkington gets into these sort of scrapes. He can't seem to recover through the field. Now, obviously, there might be damage on the car. Obviously, if it's knocked a bit of the steering bias out or the alignments out, then obviously, But you just think that if that's Ingram, Sutton, Hill, they get back through.
Yeah.
Not necessarily to the front, obviously not to the front, but they get back through. And you actually saw that in race three.
Make a fight of it.
We saw it in race three, jumping ahead. Sutton starts 15th, finishes third.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, as a consequence of obviously Sutton's excursion at the start, he did have to come into the pits to clear that radiator out, and it was quite soon found after that he'd done quite a lot of damage and was out the race.
Yep, as is customary on the opening round of a wet touring car race, we had a safety car. Tom Chilton was punted off, not entirely sure on the circumstances. No. Replays were not particularly forthcoming on the television footage.
He was down pretty much right in front of us, so we were on the exit of the old hairpin, and he'd pulled off onto the grass. Safety car was called, and then he got it going. And
well, it bogged down. He needed a push because of the wet, damp grass. He bogged it down, and once the marshals came out, gave him a push, he was able to get going, which is obviously fine. I mean, the safety car was only out for a lap, I think.
One lap, yeah.
Exactly. Can't really complain about that. We then had a remarkable restart with Josh Cook, didn't we? He just didn't seem to remember where the brake pedal was, it seems.
I can only think that he must have been cold brakes or cold tyres. With the safety car only being out for a lap, I'm a little surprised by that, but... there again, had the car fully warmed up from only doing half a lap of racing.
What setup is it on? Is it on a full wet setup? Is it on a, what's the brake biases like?
It was quite the excursion through Redgate, though, wasn't it? Skated around the outside through the gravel and did manage to get right back on at the back of the pack, basically.
The other possibility as well is that he just he thought there was a move on, and it turned off as he went offline. It was wetter, and wasn't able to keep, you know, lock the car up and to get it turned in. But it was certainly a surprise. But I think that, yeah, there's a myriad of reasons to why that could be how it happened. We then had Halstead off in the gravel. Safety car was called again. No idea what happened.
No,
possibly off on his own. Who knows?
One thing we must say, obviously, we've watched the replays this morning.
Well, you say replays.
Well, sorry. We've watched the full race again on ITV and had to sort of like rewind a couple of times through through them to try and see the replays because there were very few of them actually played.
Well, sorry, we got to see Turton and Cook sort of come together later on in the race, but nothing happened. But we weren't allowed to see how Halstead ended up in the gravels. But
no, but another safety car off the back of that.
Them's the brakes. So yeah, he might have been off on his own, might have had contact, we don't know. Once the safety car went back in, Rowbottom just didn't have the race pace at all, did he? The front four went, and Rowbottom just couldn't keep with them at all, which is surprising.
It was noticeable as well. There was almost a gap opening up within the first half a lap of the restart, and those drivers were just driving off into the distance almost.
Yeah, Camish, Ingram and Hill just, absolutely up the road, which is a surprise because Rowbottom obviously put in a fantastic lap in qualifying, and we should have probably mentioned this in the qualifying bit. He's had a lot of criticism in the off-season for moving team, for having the audacity to leave a team and to move across a team, and people questioning whether he's good enough at this level, etc., blah, blah, blah. And he bangs in a really impressive qualifying lap. It's just a shame for him that, well, for whatever reason, he didn't have the race pace to compete in the race.
No, certainly didn't. So the next driver to have an excursion through the gravel was Pearson, unfortunately locking up going into Redgate, much the same as Cook did, ran all the way around the outside and was able to rejoin, but later went into the pits, probably to either clear some stuff out or just check that everything was okay. Being a rookie, you probably need a little more feedback from your team on that rather than knowing yourself what's actually gone on.
Yeah, and you don't want to wreck the car for race two or three, do you?
Yeah,
you
know. Exactly.
Round about lap 10, we saw Hill's tyres start to fall away and Cameron's able to start to close the gap. Not a surprise that we know we've been through this a million times before. Rear-wheel drive cars in the wet don't go particularly well because they can't get the power down as easily. And then if you're on a tyre that's overheating because it's not wet and cold enough on the track to keep the temperature in the tyres, I know that sounds counterproductive because it's a wet tyre. They need to keep the water running through it, otherwise they start to grain and start to wear down quicker.
Yeah, the overheat and the rubber on the surface just makes it slip all over the place, basically.
And given the way that a rear-wheel drive car puts the power down, it wears quicker on a rear-wheel drive car than it does in the front-wheel drive car.
Especially Jakes, who just likes to slide it everywhere.
Yeah, every time he was coming out the corner, he was lighting up the rear and sliding across. So Cam was able to sort of close in and start to cleverly rank up the pressure lap on lap. Nothing silly. Camish is a wily guy. He would have known and alluded to afterwards, he did know that the tyres were going. It was just a case of making sure he either got enough in Hill's mirrors to make him make a mistake, which he didn't, or be there for when the tyres kept going off and kept going. The thing is, once the wet tyre's gone off, unless it starts to rain again, you're not really pulling it back.
And even if it does start to rain, you've worn down the tread blocks on them so much that it never works as well as it used to. But Camish certainly tried in lots of different areas, testing the water, if you pardon the pun, and then eventually managed to find the right time and make the move.
Next, we saw Lloyd off, possible incident with Gamble. Again, we don't know. And then Jenny spun at the chicane. Again, how he was with Turkington. Did Turkington spin around? Don't know. Did he lose it on the marbles? Alice on a postcard, please.
All we got a picture or a shot of was him sideways on the track on the exit. And I'm like, oh, how's he ended up there?
If anybody was at the S's and wants to just drop us a line,
please do let us know
what happened. We would be very thankful because, unfortunately, until we invest in our drone, I'm not sure we're going to get many. Actually, flying a drone above an airfield is fraught with complications, isn't it?
Sorry. however, during that time, Cook was gradually making a decent progress back through the field after his early incident going through the gravel, and he wasn't the only one charging, was he? Watson was on a mission.
Fantastic, wasn't he?
I don't know whether it was just a perfect setup or whether he's really good in wet conditions, but everything seemed to come together for him midway through that race, and he was just passing drivers left, right and centre and making really good, experienced drivers look a little slow and amateurish.
Yeah, I mean, that I said a lot about the Astra, and
it's proved you wrong this weekend.
This weekend, what I would say is that the Astra was strong here last year.
Yes, it was.
Plato and Lloyd qualified, weren't it, the year before?
Yep.
So I wouldn't necessarily say straight off the bat that it's fixed, and they're found, but they very may well have found a way of eking an extra level of performance out of the car. Having three drivers on board, having two of those from completely different series, you bring a completely different skill set.
Yep.
Aaron Taylor-Swift is good at car setup. We know this. He's proven that throughout his career. Maybe it is the perfect storm. Mm-hmm. I'm more interested to see how he gets on at Brands Hatch. But for this race and this weekend, Watson, what a revelation. And he comes with a high race regard. Lots of drivers rate him very highly. Ingram said that they've raced in the past together.
Yep.
Paul O'Neill was singing his praises all weekend. But we've seen drivers of high calibre come to touring cars and fail. Fail might be a harsh word, but struggle.
Not perform.
Yeah, struggle. Certainly. And Watson bucked the trend and actually will be considered himself slightly, perhaps unfortunate, not to have got himself on the podium.
Yeah, very much so. And that was mainly down to him, unfortunately, running out of hybrid with about four or five laps to go. And I think it just, with everything that's going on in the car, how much concentration you're having to put in, just remembering how much hybrid you've got left is quite easy to forget.
I'm still not, I mean, you seem a bit more solid in the hybrid this year. That it works. I'm still not convinced it works.
I think it was noticeable that when he didn't have the hybrid, he wasn't able to push past drivers like he was earlier in the race when he was using it almost every lap.
No, but he still caught up to the top three without any hybrid, having used it all already, and was then and then able to put pressure on Tom Ingram, who still had hybrid.
But they were battling.
Yeah,
which is always going to slow drivers up. So,
yeah, I'm still not convinced.
I know
until I see. I don't think I'm going to see it because of the way the hybrid works. But until I see a car be able to get almost like DRS, but to overtake with one with hybrid on, one with hybrid off, and see the power but difference to allow it, I'm not convinced. But who knows? It's a long season ahead. But Watson certainly did put the pressure on Ingram at the end, which was very good to see. And out front, Camish did a very super move, very Camish-esque move down the craners, set himself up brilliantly. He tried it a lap before, ended up nudging the back of Hill, backed off because of the push-to-pass rule.
Yep.
Sensible, always thinking all the time, Dan Camish. Next lap was able to start the move around the outside of turn one, then cut back to the inside, stick it around the outside of the craners so he'd have the inside line for the old hairpin and was able to get through.
It was a perfect example how the grip had gone on that BMW and that front wheel drive just had enough bite at the front end to get back underneath him. And yeah, it was a very good, competent move. Hill had just run out of hybrid at that point, and Camish was able to just canter off up the road for the last couple of laps.
Well, again, because of the rear sliding out in Hill's car, he couldn't check back. As soon as Camish was under him, that was the end of that. What was very interesting, actually, in the build-up to all this, is that Ingram left Camish alone to attack Hill.
Yeah.
Like, there's obviously a shot of him in the car pointing forward as if to say, I'm not going to challenge you, get past him, and I'll follow you through.
Yeah.
Which, again, sensible, I think, from Ingram, because he could have fought with Camish, could have wasted a lot of time fighting with Camish. And that would have allowed Hill to get up the road and not have to worry so much about tyre preservation, line driving, etc. And in the end, it didn't work for Camish. So it didn't work for Ingram in the sense he didn't get past Hill, but it worked in the sense of he was able to drive his race, get a good third. And actually, if Camish had got through a lap or two earlier, he might have been able to get past Hill himself.
Yeah, certainly. But yeah, rounding out those race results then, obviously Camish took the win from Hill, Ingram and Watson, followed by Dan Rowbottom in 5th, Rob Collard in 6th, Adam Morgan 7th, George Gamble in 8th, Josh Cook in 9th, Aaron Taylor and Smith in 10th.
Rory Butcher in 11th, Colin Turkson battled back to position number 12, Aidan Moffat 13th, Dexter Patterson scoring points. That's a great result for Dex.
It's a driver in there.
There it is, but that's a great concept.
It is in that car as well.
And actually, shout out to Tom Chilton, who would have been at the back of the field when the safety car came out and finished 15th.
Yeah.
So that's a hell of a recovery.
Yeah. And probably showed what he was about to go on and do.
Yeah, but yeah, fair play to Chilton. We have questioned Chilton on this podcast.
Yeah.
I think it's important that the praise has to be as loud as the lack of praise in that way, because... Yeah, that's a really good result for Chilton, and he's, fantastic. Fantastic recovery drive. Well, I'd also say for Dex Patterson to score points in that Cupra, in that team, given we know the other side of the garage is not a happy place to be at the moment, with Edward's car being built at 2 a.m. on the Saturday morning,
yeah,
and the problems she's had all weekend, for Dex. I mean, even though that's not your car, that can't give your young driver confidence. It's going to knock it a little bit. It's got to, because you're going to be thinking...
I think the main thing would be that they were so focused on getting Jade's car ready for that Saturday morning that his car may have not had the input that it needed for the weekend, and preparation would have been down to almost a limited crew.
Then you also hear that she's had to put in with power steering problems on the first lap. Do you immediately go, oh, gosh.
Is there anything wrong with my car?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know... So, yeah, for him to keep his head in a difficult race, I like Dex. I think he's a good driver. I think there's only more to come from him. I think he did very well to score a point there. Obviously, at the end of the race, penalties are always handed out.
Not always, only where they're necessary or where they're not necessary.
Let's start with the easy one, shall we? Boutel got a drive-through for grid infringement. That's slam dunk. That outside slam your dunk. Box, so yep. If you're not lined up on the grid properly, you get a drive-through penalty. There could be no argument about that. Osborne got a 5-second penalty, which is probably for track limits. I haven't looked at the paperwork, to be fair.
No, but normally that is the stock and standard penalty for a track limit abuse.
Always pushing past, but he got it during the race.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't have thought it'd be a push in the pass. And then Hill kept his result, which I think is right.
Yes.
But then got demoted 3 places on the grid for the next race and given penalty points. Now, to me, I sound like Tim Harvey then. To me...
It's harsh.
Yeah, super harsh, super wrong.
I think even in commentary, they said, yeah, that looks like a racing incident. And even the couple of times that we've watched it back this morning, it's a racing incident. You're going to expect those kind of comings together at the start of a race. If Hill's turned left into Sutton, then fair play. Okay, that's a penalty. But Sutton's cut across in front of him.
I think the only thing I'd be comfortable in having a penalty is that the contact with row bottom is avoidable.
Yes.
And then, I agree with you. I'm just playing devil's advocate to the point. So have they gone, look, the contact with Robot was avoidable. That contact then meant you hit Sutton, and therefore that's where you've been given the penalty. If you don't hit Robot, you don't hit Sutton. The Sutton one may be unavoidable, but the Robot one was on, and the chain link. To me, that's a tenuous argument, and I don't think Hill should have got a penalty. I also think that, and I know that the rules say this isn't the case, but I do think that if Sutton finishes the race in and around where he went off, i.e. sixth and up, Hill doesn't get a penalty. I think Hill only gets a penalty because Sutton doesn't finish the race. Now, I know that's not in the rules, but we say the same in F1, don't we?
Yeah.
They're not supposed to take into consideration the final result of the incident, but I think the grown-up truth is that they probably do.
Yeah, there's probably almost somewhat in the back of their minds going, well, he hasn't finished the race. We kind of need to do something as a result of the contact you've had with him. It'll be interesting to see what data would show. Obviously, we're not privy to that. And whatever decision was made in the stewards' room, Hill was accepting of it, if not pleased with it.
The only thing I'd finally say on that one is that I think that he could have been given a verbal or even a reprimand.
Yeah.
I don't think he would deserve penalty drops or penalty points. A verbal or written reprimand would have probably been sufficient in that case for me.
Yeah.
But there we go. We're not stewards. We're not part of the course. We're probably a bit too generous. But I will say, just finally, before we move on to race two, even on, and I know social media is never a good barometer of, particularly on Twitter normally, but the touring car lot are normally a lot friendlier than the football lot, or the F1 lot for that matter. A lot of Sutton fans on social media were saying that that's a bonkers decision.
Yeah.
Even as Sutton fans, that's just, it's never a penalty. But what is interesting is Hill did manage to keep his result. So,
yeah,
I guess he'll take that at the end of the day. Right.
Yeah, let's move on to race two.
Race two.
So race two then, well, this is going to go down in the history books as one for the annuals, one for the ages, one to talk about. We'll probably end up, if we're still podding in 10 years' time, do a 10 years ago. Do you remember that crazy race at the Winter Park?
It was very reminiscent of that race where Jack Gough took the win at Silverstone in completely mixed conditions, and you didn't know what drivers needed to be on what tyres at what times.
What I would say about that win is that he was driving a barge, which was very, very helpful.
Yes, it was helpful at that point.
In the conditions. Yep. But no, everything pointed to it being a dry race.
Yeah, apart from the rain just before the start of the race.
Okay. When they went out to the grid, when they went out to the grid, everything suggested it was going to be a dry race. You'd had the Porsches on track, which lift a lot of water due to their weight.
Yeah.
You'd had a prolonged, I wouldn't say sunny patch, but prolonged cloud patch.
Dry.
Yeah, dry cloud patch, which had dried out a lot of the circuit. You could see a dry line on the circuit as well, and the offline was still a little bit damp, but not too problematic, I don't think, for slicks.
No.
Then on the way round, on the green flag lap, the rain started.
Yes. And it didn't start all over the track. No. It was just mainly at one end, old hairpin upwards sort of thing. We certainly noticed it where we were, and we were thinking, oh, hang on, this is going to make this really interesting. And just to note, before the race actually got started, I think it was Jade Edwards and Nick Hamilton came into the pits to change on to the wet tyres.
Which actually, I think, obviously, in retrospect, well,
nothing to lose, have they?
Obviously, in hindsight, you're going to say great move by Haas, and it was, don't get me wrong, because it paid dividends, as we'll get to. But equally, as you say, completely the right move. If you're that kind of team, you're not at the front, and you've got to look for any advantage you can get, absolutely give it a go. What have you got to lose?
Boutel was also pushed into the pits at the same time, but we believe that was more for a technical issue, although he did get back out on track on wets.
Yeah, I know it's the opening weekend. I know there's a long way to go. I am worried about Haas this season.
Yeah, so
running six cars. I just don't think they're going to be able to manage it. I just, you know. And I think, actually, the rain has masked a lot of their problems this weekend, because if Hamilton doesn't go on to do what he does in this race, you're probably more focusing on the Edwards debacle, whereas for obvious reasons and correct reasons, people are focusing on Nick rather than on Jade.
So the formation lap got underway, and there were quite noticeable lines left on the track from where people were trying to warm up those slick tyres, leaving tram lines all the way down the track. And after the race, Chilton mentioned that he saw this and he knew straight away. An experienced guy such as him, he knows what the conditions are going to do. If you're seeing conditions like that on the track, new tarmac, it's probably not going to dry as quickly as you want it to. And he made that snap decision to go, right, we need to get in and go onto the wets.
What's amazing about that is that he's not the only experienced driver on the grid.
No,
I'm stunned that someone like Colin, who's already starting low down the grid, doesn't go, do you know what? I don't fancy running a race in wets.
Yeah,
a wet race on my slick car.
Especially considered his teammate Morgan, who was starting, sixth, seventh on the
eighth,
grid.
Well
inside the top 10, was like, no, I need to make this decision. And he was one of the drivers, of about six, I think, that came in before lights went out at the end of the formation lap to change onto those wet tyres.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just stunned that nobody else took that initiative to do so. Well, same initiative. Gamble, Jelly, Pearson and Househead all did. So actually, from a kind of Turkish point of view, both Jelly and Morgan decided they were going to pit.
Yeah.
I'm just amazed. I'm not trying to single out Turkish, because equally, I'm surprised Sutton didn't to a degree, although perhaps he was thinking...
Well, none of the Napa cars did.
Yeah, but Sutton's at the back of the grid.
Mm-hmm.
I really would have taken that gamble. But I suppose it's easy for me to say that, obviously.
It's easy to say that after the race as well, looking at how well those drivers then went on to do in the race and how much of an advantage they had coming through the field.
A lot also depends on the setup. Had Sutton gone for a completely dry setup and was, you know, didn't want to go in and put a wet tyres on a completely dry setup? I don't know. But it was a surprise. Into the opening race, opening lap, Moffat slid off the circuit going down the Corona curves after contact around Taylor Smith. No penalty sanctioned out for this. I think it's a racing incident. I think the stewards are right to consider that they're on the wrong tyre at this point. The rain had really started to come down.
Yeah. And there was about six or seven of them all together there as well. Trying to find that grip on that track is almost impossible.
Collard ran wide on his own due to damage. Though we're not entirely sure how it happened. It looks as if he also got caught up somewhere around Taylor Smith, but
I'm not sure if the car actually had a failure of its own.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure if there's contact. I'm not sure if a little bit of rubbing.
Because coming through Redgate and Hollywood. Coming through Redgate and Hollywood at the top of the circuit, he looked a little slow, and the car almost looked like it had a little bit of a puncture on that front left. And then it really became obvious, obviously, when he went off at the old hairpin and then stopped later just after McLean's, that there was serious suspension damage there.
Yeah.
But no big hit or anything like that seemed to have caused
that. That we saw. Yeah, we're not entirely sure on that one. Because of the safety car, Osborne pitted for wets, as did Moffat. Moffat, to be fair, at that point was at the back of the field after his, so had nothing to lose. again, I am stunned. It was quite a long safety car, this, to cover Collard. I am stunned no one of the leaders took a chance into the safety car, because you'd like to get back out on the lead lap.
With the drivers that had come in at that point, it was a half and half split for the grid. I think there were 12 or 13 drivers out there still on the dry tyres.
Yeah.
And then the rest of them were on the wet. And I'm like, well, this is going to go one of two ways, and it...
Yes, yeah. So the safety car's out for four or five laps, and during that period, as you say, half the field came in, including...
And it started raining harder.
Yep, including Dobble, Powell, Butcher. Although, actually, towards the end of the safety car laps, the rain had stopped.
Mm.
And then the second the safety car went in, it poured down again.
Yep.
But I'm slightly surprised that under those conditions, they didn't go. However, I suppose a few points come to mind. One, are they thinking if the rain carries on, it's going to get red flagged because too much of the field is on? But I think by that point, too much of the field had pitted for...
Yeah,
for slicks. And actually, I agree thoroughly with what Tim Harvey said on this. On the
careful,
no, he's absolutely right. That's how racing should be. You have to make a decision. I get so angry in F1 where we don't go racing because it's a bit of water, so we can't possibly send the cars out because they're on the wrong tyre.
Well, we had exactly the same situation at Silverstone where drivers made that decision, and the rain was far worse at Silverstone as well. It was torrential. And we still had drivers out there, even on wet tyres. I remember Moffitt had that big spin, didn't he, coming through.
I accept on the lap to the grid, if they're on the grid and then it starts to bucket it down, then there could be a director that comes out saying, this is a wet weather race. That's fine. Yeah. I don't mind that. That's fine. But once the race has started, I don't like the idea you red flag it because not enough cars are on slicks, because that's a decision you make. If some cars have come in and some cars haven't, that's motorsport. That's what the teams are for. That's what your tacticians are for. That's what the driver's got to think about. So, yeah, fair play, right call for me.
As you say, it took a little while to clear Collard's car because it was in a little bit of a difficult position. But lap seven, the race got back underway, and it was Morgan leading those wet runners. And it was noticeable how much more grip they had on that first lap.
What was also interesting, just quickly on that point, is that Dobble was the last one to get back out onto the lead laps.
Yes.
Everyone else who pitted towards the end of the safety car, including Butcher and including Powell, were then down a lap.
Yeah, which in touring cars, with how short the races are comparatively, you're not going to get that back, really.
No, absolutely not. As I said, the safety car went in and then conditions got worse. As you rightly say, Morgan was leading the pack. Hamilton and Chilton were flying through the field as well. Yeah. Hamilton was racing really nicely. Now, I know people are going to go, oh, he had the tire advantage, but he still has to get past the cars.
Yeah, he does.
You know, and actually, it's dangerous because he's racing...
Much more dangerous.
He's racing cars that are on the wrong tyre in the pouring rain, who've got no grip, no stopping power at all.
All it takes is for one of them to slide wide and he'd be on the outside collected, where he's got loads of grip and he gets tagged.
Yeah, collected, spun round, etc., etc. Yeah. So, yeah, none of that nonsense. He made the right call and he... race really, really nicely indeed. Chilton then did fantastic move.
Lovely move, wasn't it? He made the most of Morgan getting blocked off as well.
Yeah, so trying to get past a gaggle of slow-running cars who are being very tiptoey down to old Hairpin, understandably, still being on the wrong tyre. Morgan, kind of, you say, got boxing, couldn't go forward, couldn't go to the outside, and then, so I couldn't go to the inside, so Chilton decided, well, I'm not sitting here, I'm going to go all the way around the outside.
Yeah, had all three cars going down into the old hairpin, and then had another one on the way up to McLean's as well, and I think I pointed it out when we were at the track, and I'm like, he's flying.
Yeah. And actually, even if Morgan had come out of that front, Morgan wasn't winning that race. No. Chilton was winning that race, hands down. He got that spot on.
Yeah, he did.
Showed how... despite some comments that we've made, that there's still very much a good race driver in there.
Yeah, it wasn't the only action to happen down the old hairpin, because the following lap, there was an optimistic move, shall we say, from Gamble on Pearson.
Yeah, no fault for me. He tries to go down the inside. Pearson gives him room.
Yeah.
Ultimately, Gamble can't slow the car down. Ends up sort of clipping as he comes past Pearson and goes up into the gravel chat. Thankfully, Pearson, no damage done. Although... I do wonder.
I think that probably is where the damage was done for him. Certainly for Gamble, who had a broken rear toe link coming out of that incident.
And stay listening for a Russell rant that'll be coming up after the rest of the race 2 review, which is coming up quite quickly, actually, because after that, nothing really happened because half the field had to pit. And then trying to keep in touch with where everyone was really difficult.
Yeah,
to be fair. The Cavendish, Sutton and Ingram stayed out impossibly long for me. I don't know why they...
Yeah.
Because even at that point, if it does stop raining and you're on your slicks, it's not going to dry quick enough.
No, Turkington was one of the first drivers actually to make that switch, and it was noticeable in the race position that he then finished. I think he finished ninth.
But you made a really good point. I know, I'm going to break.
Did I?
That you had three Accelerate cars, all on wet tyres.
Yeah.
Chilton tearing through, Pearson doing the same, and Halstead not doing bad either, considering that Halstead and Pearson are both, well, they are rookies in the championship.
Yeah.
You know, and Chilton absolutely tearing ahead, and none of them, and Honda didn't bring in Ingram in.
I know.
It's a stunning decision for
me. And Sutton, I think, was out there for the longest of all of them.
I think Sutton probably was on the view, he had nothing to lose, having started so far back that he was going to go for it and hope the track. Because also Sutton's probably the best driver to race in those conditions on the wrong tyre.
Yes, definitely.
But yeah, I would say that I agree with you. And then we had Doble nick the independent win right on the last lap. Hamilton got a little bit leery at times, a little bit of slides, a little bit of skids, understandable in the conditions.
Yep.
And Doble was able to nick it right on the end but for the independent win. But Hamilton still finished seventh on the track. He'd be promoted to sixth, as we'll get to in a minute. And just on Hamilton, it was really good to see him score points.
It was.
I don't want to hear any nonsense of, well, he locked into the right time. Motorsport's about luck. He made the right call at the right time, and he was still able to race the race, not get involved in the incidents, not go off from a mistake. And he raced hard with drivers that, you know, you wouldn't necessarily expect him to be racing against. He had to pick his way through a field, as we've discussed. So I don't want to hear any armchair nonsense of, well, if he's on the right tyre, you've still got to race the race.
Yeah, and him and his engineer made the right decision as well. Yeah,
and Hamilton kept his head.
Yeah.
It'd be very easy to get excited in that situation, I should imagine.
There were a couple of times where, coming out of the final chicane, and he did run wide. He lost a couple of positions to Osborne and Jenny, but he didn't let that affect him. He still kept on going and was able to bring the car home.
Yeah, so fantastic result for him. Now, strap yourselves in.
Can I give a finishing order first?
Yes, go on then.
So, obviously, Tom Chilton won the race from Adam Morgan, from Ronan Pearson on track by Osborne in fourth, Jelly fifth, Doble sixth, Hamilton seventh, Halstead in eighth, Turkington ninth, Ingram in 10th, which wasn't too bad considering how late he came in as well. Managed to get Bobby Thompson in the last lap, who finished 11th, from Dan Rowbottom, Ash Sutton, Dan Kamish, Dan Lloyd, Rory Butcher and Jake Hill.
However,
that wasn't where it finished.
The Dulux paint roller decided to have a difference of opinion. So Ronan Pearson failed the ride height check and got kicked out,
disqualified, excluded,
which,
however you want to put it.
I hate in wet weather racing. In dry weather racing, I'm a bit more understanding.
Yeah.
Because you don't need to go off the racing line in dry weather racing. And actually, Cook, who failed it at Silverstone a couple of years ago, I didn't really have much sympathy for because he decided to
launch it down the foot.
Yeah, he decided to go over a hillock to try and get rid of Butcher. So in that situation.
But we have seen it countless times where the weather has affected a race result due to ride height issues at the end.
Yeah, the problem is that you can appeal on the basis that damage is caused by somebody else, but how do you prove that damage is caused by somebody else? Because we don't know if Gamble caused it. I've got no idea.
We're not. Obviously, we know he's failed a post-race inspection, and we're assuming that, yes, it will be down to ride height, and that it may have well been low at the start. We don't know. But it could also have been down to the weather running off track. It could have been the contact with Gamble. It could have been numerous things. But it seems to happen a lot more in wet weather.
It does, because I think, you know, you go through puddles which rip off the bottom of the car.
Yep.
There's more contact in wet weather because of obvious reasons. Because it's raining. There's more contact. There's less grip on the track. It's fairly obvious that's going to happen. I just don't like that in the wet weather at all. I've said before, for me, in those situations, if there's any suggestion of rain, then I would be looking at doing, it was a ride height, by the way, just for confirmation. Check the cars on the way to the grid or on the grid for ride heights. And then...
What if it rains midway through the race?
That's what I'm saying. Then it's fine afterwards, to a degree.
Okay.
Because they can't change the ride height in the race themselves. They can't get out of the car and lower the car. So if it comes to the grid, we're correct.
Yeah.
Then I think that you can then give more you know, you can give more leniency in the race, because if Pearson starts on the grid of a ride height setting failure, then there's no complaints. The team can either pull him in. There can be no complaints in that situation. If he finishes the race, starts it fine, finishes it not at the right level, and you can go, well, it's pouring down the rain, there's been contact made, let's give him not the benefit of the doubt, but a bit more leniency.
Mm.
I know that causes problems, because how do you keep it consistent? I know, but to me, it just doesn't seem right that you get excluded for a ride height failure in the rain when there are so many reasons it can fail in the rain.
Ironically as well, if you were to rip that front plank off, which it is, it's a piece of wood, piece of plywood, then actually it gains you another extra, well, that much probably,
which
the roller would get uneasily.
Yeah. So he's better off in that situation. We've seen it in the past with drivers literally trying to knock things off them, or
Sheddon,
or Ingram going as wide as possible to get as much debris on the tyre, just to make sure he rises himself up an extra. And that's not, I'm not accusing Ingram of anything. That's fair enough. That's clever racing. But to me, I don't like the rule. I get why you've got to have minimum ride heights. Fine.
Yeah.
But I don't like in wet weather that you can lose it for potentially no fault of your own.
But as a result of that, he would start race three from the back.
Race three.
Almost a little processional, considering the rest of the races so far this weekend.
Yeah, I think by this point, everybody had a little bit, or had enough, both drivers and fans combined. It was a wet race insofar as everybody started on wet tyres. It was probably the driest race of the day by the end.
The sun was out.
Yeah.
Which was nice and pleasant as well. They were all on wet tyres, but there was no rain in the air. Sun was out. The track was going to dry. It was just a question of how much.
Ball number 12 was pulled out by Tom Chilton. Nice to see IGB can no longer afford a table. that might put our promotion up the ranks in some doubt if they can't afford a table, but even we've got a table.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Face change.
I know, that's two on behind us. We're in a house full of tables. But that did put Robottom on pole initially, but obviously after Pearson's disqualification, everybody moved up one. And Dan Kamish started the day on pole, which he would be very happy with.
Start the day with a Napa front row, end the day with a Napa front row.
Oh, is there a conspiracy afoot? once again, once the race got going, Robottom just seemed to forget how to start a car this weekend.
Yeah, I think, if I remember rightly, have we seen him struggle with starts before?
Especially
as well?
The front row, Brands Hatch comes to mind.
And I don't know what it is, whether the nerves get to him, whether it's just not quite getting the right bite point. But, it's something he's got to work on.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Listen, now, Turkish have a very good start on the rear-wheel drive, able to fly through the gaps that were created straight up into second position.
Very quick start.
We then saw the first... See, this bit annoys me, the first contact of the race, and this does annoy me. I'm ranting a lot today.
You like a good rant.
There's a bit of an incident in race one. Halstead ends up in the gravel. Replay suggests that Hill hits Dobble, who then hits Halstead, who then goes off in the gravel.
Can I just point out that Halstead had a very, very slow start?
You may
like, point
out.
Worse than Robottom as well. And he was being shuffled down the outside of the pack going into Redgate. And Hill was obviously trying to make up as many positions as possible at the start, having finished last race in, 16th?
Yeah. And whilst I don't think this is a penalty either, this is way more of a penalty than race one for me.
Yes. Because it is.
To me, this one is avoidable from Hill.
He gets into the back of Dobble.
Yeah.
He could...
There's much more space on track, and he can break earlier. Like, this is way more avoidable than the first incident was.
Yeah.
And I don't understand how the first one is a penalty... And this one isn't. I don't think either are, for the record.
I think they're both racing incidents where...
But I don't understand how one is and one isn't.
I know. But Halstead ended up in the gravel, bringing out the fourth safety car of the day.
With one of the touring cars, yeah. I'm not sure we had a single race without a safety car. Did the first Porsche sprint get off? No, because we're totally off.
There were loads.
Yeah.
It was kind of expected in the wet weather, though.
Ingram, on the safety car restart, Ingram was able to tear past Colin Turkey with a ballsy move down the old hairpin. Caught Colin a little bit napping, was able to get right down his inside.
I just think the front-wheel drive cars, one, are better on a race restart.
Yeah.
And two, in those damp conditions, react a lot better.
And also, I think Ingram's a better driver.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, last season proved that, literally.
But yes. Osborne, who got to, we should quickly mention him, got his first podium of his racing career,
yep.
Being promoted up to position number three after race two's Pearson's disqualification. He decided that the best course of the restart, the best thing to do at the end of the safety car restart, was to turn Adam Morgan around on the pit straight for reasons best known to himself.
Not quite on the pit straight. As he was exiting the S's, coming onto the pit straight,
he got very eager
on the accelerator and just turned Morgan round. Consequently, as Morgan was spinning, he then clipped Osborne and put him out of the race. But yeah, it was a really stupid move.
But no penalty.
No.
That's
more under safety car than anything else.
As I said in commentary as well, is that generally anything before the green flag is looked upon very, very dimly by the stewards that you shouldn't be doing it. I just don't understand how... look, we don't get all the camera angles, we don't get all the data. There may well be a very good reason. If you can say that the whole car died or something and it was unavoidable...
Yeah, or Morgan checked up on him or...
Morgan brake tests him or whatever, then...
Yeah.
But I'm astonished that wasn't a...
As a result of that, safety cars breed safety cars.
Sure do.
Osborne's damage, he managed to get it down towards the end of the pit lane, but had to pull off. So the safety car came back out for another lap whilst the marshals pushed him back into the pit lane.
On the restart, Rowbottom and Thompson replayed the old adage that Robin is racing, banging door handles for half a lap before Thompson ended up tapping Rowbottom into a half spin and sending him on to the gravel. Thompson would get a penalty for this post-race, but only a verbal warning, which I think is fair because the two of them were banging door handles. We're probably right on the edge of what is acceptable until
they had a stern talking to, more so on Thompson's part, because obviously he had that final action of pushing Robot on off at McLean's.
But as I say, they were, it was 6-1 half dozen of the other for the corners preceding, and they were just about on the right side of the law.
Yeah, they weren't the only two drivers to come together on the restart. Hamilton and Butcher also came together at the old hairpin. Butcher looking to try and put a move on Hamilton, but was a little unstable, a bit squirrely, and clipped the front of Hamilton's car, which sent both of them wide off into the gravel, but both continued.
Absolutely. We then had Hill and Sutton both on the charge. Obviously, they both started far down the field and were trying to get as high as possible. Both superb in these kind of conditions and showing why. We then had a very exciting sort of end quartet to the race, which was Turkington versus Ingram versus Sutton versus Hill. Ingram was in second. Carriage had gone by this point.
He was down the road.
He was in Brands Hatch at this point, getting ready for the next round. Ingram was second. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit about Turkington here, if I may.
Cool.
Doesn't get past Ingram.
No.
Despite probably should have been able to at that point.
Couple of chances as well.
Couple of chances too.
Yeah.
Ingram, very good driver, knows where to put the car, all that kind of stuff. Colin isn't dirty, doesn't overcommit, etc., etc. But I think this ends up costing Colin because he ends up behind both Sutton and Hill.
Definitely.
Because Sutton and Hill can catch up with a fair amount of ease.
Mm.
Sutton then shows him how to do an aggressive but fair move, i.e. down the inside, a little bit of rubbing, forces him wide.
Mm.
Thank you very much. Absolutely legal.
Yeah.
Rough, but absolutely legal. That's touring car racing. And Jake Hill
made the most of it.
Desperate to follow Sutton through.
Yeah.
And then Colin bangs Hill's rear wheel as he goes through. And I do think there's a little bit of needle between those two. Hill's comment after race one was interesting about that nobody else, or worse to the effect of nobody else in the real drive car was able to do what he could do.
Yep.
That's not verbatim. That's basically my interpretation of what he said. And I'd argue that Turkington made a bigger fight with Hill than he did with Sutton.
Yeah, I think at that point, I don't know whether it was a case of the tyres on Turkington's car were going off. He had also run out of hybrid at that point, whereas
You've been sponsored by hybrid this week. Wow.
Taking my Tim Harvey pill. Whereas the other three drivers...
You saw this lozenge, didn't you?
Yeah, whereas the other three drivers in that battle pack, it's an Addison line there... still had hybrid left and they were able to use it. Turkington, I don't know whether the racecraft is slightly going or whether it was just how the car felt afterwards, but he dropped off from them once he'd been passed by them as well.
The thing is, in race one, you can say, did the contact lead to a damage to the car, which meant he couldn't go back through the field? You can give him the benefit of the doubt, maybe. Yep. Race two, does okay in the conditions. Race three, to me, this is where I just don't feel he can win another championship because whilst those three are in the series, yeah. I don't think he can. And you've already chucked Cavendish into that line as well, to be fair. Yeah. I don't think he can win another championship because I don't think he's got the hard ass racer in him to do what Sutton did to him to somebody else.
Not as clinical.
No.
Not as clinical now.
If that was positioned as a... If anyone else was behind... So say Turkin's in second and any of those other three drivers are behind him, they get second. They don't finish fifth. Yeah. They get second. Yeah. About a shadow of a doubt.
Sutton and Hill weren't the only drivers fighting through the field. Cook was as well, making up places from 19th down on the grid back up into 7th, which greatly amused me because it meant that your prediction didn't come through, which we will get to in the separate pod. But yeah, he was driving well through the field. However, on the reverse of that, Lloyd seemed to was in free fall for the second half of that third race.
Yeah, but
and I don't know whether there was an issue with the car, it just seemed to be halfway through he was losing position after position after position with no fight back, and that's not the Lloyd that we know.
No, I'd imagine there's something wrong with the car, for being perfectly honest with you. The final bit of action of the weekend saw Dobble and Gamble come together. A bit of a messy weekend for Gamble. Quite a few problems. And actually, he would get a reprimand after the race for this, Gamble.
Yeah, he almost rammed into the back of him, actually breaking a toe link on the Astra. But yeah, it was an uncharacteristic move from him as well.
He got a verbal warning for this. And then actually, also just to mention another penalty, Rowbottom has been penalised by a three-place grid penalty for the next round of the championship for an incident involving Aidan Moffat. We have no idea what the incident was.
I haven't seen it at all.
No.
So, yeah, maybe that will come to light when we get to Brands, but...
Yeah, well, yeah. I imagine they will do a little replay.
It must be significant for that.
Yeah. It's going to be similar to what you thought Hill on race one on that basis. So a quick roundup of the top 10 or top 15 result for race number three. Camish from Ingram from Sutton, who recovered his weekend to get to a podium position. Jake Hill, Colin Turkington, Bobby Thompson, who I think will be pretty pleased getting the top six result, definitely, given all of Hart's problems, which we'll talk about on the driver grade prediction pod. Josh Cook from Tom Chilton with Aaron Taylor-Smith and Dan Rowbottom making up the top 10. Great weekend for Aaron Taylor-Smith as well.
Oh, yeah.
Particularly racing on tenterhooks that your kid might be being born in a minute as well. So, yeah.
I think we had an update before every race, didn't we, from the grid girl to say whether his wife had had a little one yet.
But fair play. And actually, as I've said, we'll see what Vauxhall can do throughout the season. But at the minute, the humble pie ingredients have been laid out on the table.
I'm gradually mixing them up. So Butcher finished 11th, followed by Watson in 12th to round off a good weekend for him.
Very much
Gamble in 13th, followed by Ricky Collard and then Aidan Moffitt with the final point.
Just a quick shout out to Patterson and Boutel, who are both on the cusp of points again. We did say coming into the season, do you think everybody can score a point this year?
Well, there are only four drivers that haven't so far.
And Edwards, I think, will be kicking, not herself, the situation, because in race two, she should have got points based on the fact that she was running well in the points on the wet tyres.
Well, based on the fact that her and Hamilton were the first drivers to make that switch.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if the car had performed like Hamilton's had, then maybe she would have been up there.
Right, a quick roundup of the driver standings before we go then. Yeah. Not that it means anything at this stage, but BMW tweeted out at the end of race two that they were joint leaders with Adam Morgan, so I suppose we better do something about it too. Dan Camish leads the way on 48 from Tom Ingram, 40. Ingram would be very happy to come out of the weekend with that.
Massively.
Given the difficulties of the weekend.
Yeah.
Jake Hill on 32, Tom Chilton 30, Adam Morgan 26, Colin Turkin is sixth on 23, tied at Dan Rowbottom, Colin ahead presumably due to results on the road.
Yep.
Andrew Watson, 8th, with 17 points, ahead of Ash Sutton, who's got 16. Bobby Thompson rounds out the top 10 with 16. Then Cook, Osborne, Jelly, Taylor-Smith, Collard, Butcher, disappointing weekend for Butcher. Mikey Doble, Gamble, Nicholas Hamilton, Halstead, Moffat, Lloyd, Patterson, Pearson, Powell, Boutern, Edwards. Only four drivers left to score points. One of those will definitely do so in Ronan Pearson.
Oh, yeah. He was so unfortunate this weekend.
Yeah.
He looked like he had the race pace there to keep up with certainly mid-pack, if not pushing towards the front. And he was very unlucky. A few small errors in there have probably cost him this weekend.
I also think that Boutel will nick a point somewhere in the season.
Yeah, so do I.
I'm not as convinced on Paolo Edwards.
No.
Yet. Powell's got the car.
Powell should have the car.
I'm... Edwards, I just hope he gets better from here. I just hope they can write this off as a really bad weekend, work hard ahead of Brands Hatch.
And find out the issues. Right,
yeah. Because I feel really sorry for her, because she's put a lot of effort to get to the grid, as has everybody, don't get me wrong, but she's put a lot of effort to get to the grid, and that car just...
It came late on as well.
Yeah, it's just...
The deal came late, the car came late, it's...
It's shades of Rick Parfitt last year, isn't it? Unfortunately.
Very much so.
But unfortunately for Parfitt, it never got any better, really. And that's my fear.
That was an infinity. That car was past it, so... but yeah, thanks for listening. We'll be back with our results podcast, as it were. So we'll go through the driver grades, look at the predictions that we made, and have a little bit of general chit-chat around that and how the championships are looking, which will be out with you later this week.
Bye for now.
Hi there, it's Sam here. If you're enjoying this podcast, why don't you leave us a like, and don't forget to subscribe. You can also leave us a 5-star review, and we're also on social media at Facebook and Instagram, where you can message us directly.